Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Hey, y'all, welcome to the End of the Line podcast. Rocky's tongue-tied about half a dozen times, and he says it. The only person he could find in the southeastern United States with a tongue with more silver on it than his was mine. So I'm glad y'all are here today. I got Josh Webb on one end of the line and Rocky LaFleur on the other end of the line and Rob Kroom up in Jackson, Tennessee. He wishes he was on the line, but he's not. So you guys got me and Rocky and Josh.
That's it. That's the way. That there will never be another introduction done by me or Rocky, period, ever. And I don't care if Spence is not even the guest. We're going to go back and use and need about three recordings so Spence can be the opener. That was fantastic.
Only other one that I know that, close to that is Troy. You know, Troy did that a couple of times.
He took it so serious and tried to get word for word every time. That's what made it so great.
All right, Spence, I got to ask this. How is the Rolling Thunder game call pro staff coming? I know you love the Lions pro staff, too.
You know, the Rolling Thunder pro staff is a lot like Warren Buffett's checking account, you know. We got it so full that we had to create a second one. I mean, we're just busting at the seams. And the FDIC will only insure so many pro staffers, so we've had to start a second one. It's crazy. You know, it's like Donald Trump says, it's huge.
It's huge. I like it.
Well, on Monday, just kidding around with Rob. And, of course, he takes it to the extreme.
Oh,
and
yeah. Sure.
I'll say this, I have to ask you forgiveness. Rob had nothing to do with, hey, send me the call videos because we, you know, want to make sure you know how to blow a call if you're going to be a part of a pro staff.
By the way, I've never, ever asked somebody to blow a call, ever, to vouch for their pro staff. But if I did, Rob would have never been on it because when Rob was first on the Rolling Thunder pro staff, he couldn't blow a cut down to save his life. But that's neither here nor there.
Now the truth comes out. I like it.
Yeah. Anyways, okay.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, he wanted to help you without you knowing. He stuck his neck out for you and wanted to build your pro staff.
Yeah.
And you know what you should have done is, you know, everybody that messaged or whatever, you should have just referred them to Rob.
The hilarious part about the messages, and just for everybody listening that's wondering, so you know, Josh, I don't know if Josh Chris will ever be able to pay back his ceasefire bill from the data that was taken up by all the messages he got on the 3-for-1 deals. Poor boy, he's paying for private school for his two kids, you know, and now he's got to pay cell phone bill. But the hilarious part about the messages I got is that you could totally tell that the people that sent messages, like, on the one hand, they really wanted to be a part of the pro staff. They were very genuine messages, so much so that Rob actually said, man, it kind of hurts my feelings. I feel bad. On the other hand, they were, it was like, they weren't going to send a video. But they were going to stick their neck out there and say, if there's, you know, if there's a spot and if there was any shred of truth to what Rob's saying, I just want you to know I'd like to be considered. They weren't going to go full tilt, you know, and send a call-in video, but so I got a pretty good laugh out of it.
Hey, I got a crazy question for both of y'all before we jump back into the story.
All right.
And I know that it's been crazier in Memphis where you are with the snow today. Because as we record this on Wednesday night, there was snow in the area today, people going crazy. Of course, you know, two things that always happen in the South when it snows. You have wrecks, and everybody goes and buys the bread and the milk out of the grocery store. So, Spencer, answer this just crazy question. Why do they go to the store and buy the bread and milk? In part B, if they're buying the bread and the milk out, shouldn't the meat and the cereal be gone too?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. I don't know, Rob. I don't know. I'm trying to, you kind of stumped me there with that one. I've never been to the grocery store on a day when it snowed. But I've also never been snowed in ever. So, I don't quite understand it. I mean,
well, look, I'm telling you, today, this afternoon, it was 3:30, 4 o'clock, something like that. I ran to town to pick up what was going to be supper later. And I thought, well, crap, it's only like 4 o'clock. I'll just run to Walmart. I got some time to kill. Well, when I got right in the edge of town, 10 minutes from Walmart, it started snowing again. It's been snowing down here pretty much all day. It started snowing again, which was really another reason I wanted to go to Walmart, because I wanted to see what the hype was about. And I'm not kidding you. You could have taken a picture today at 4 o'clock, and you could go take a picture next Friday, Black Friday, at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you won't be able to tell the difference. The people were flogging the door. And I thought, what in the world is going on? I'm like, why? It's just, it's not even spicking down here. But, you know, I don't know.
Let me tell you. you brought up Black Friday. I'm gonna tell a spoiler alert on a Black Friday story real quick. The very, very first show of any kind that we worked in the call business, my buddy Torrent and his wife Lexi volunteered to go with us. And we drove from Memphis, really from Millington at the time, was where the shop was. We borrowed an RV from a subcontractor that worked with Torrent on the river. Torrent moves barges and cleans barges. And he had this guy that did like deep black water diving, you know, for barges and stuff. And he told Torrent, he said, if you ever want to borrow one of these RVs, you can. Torrent said, man, it'd be awesome. We took an RV. We left my parents' house about 8 o'clock on Thanksgiving night. And we drove straight to Stuttgart to do Wings Over the Prairie. So we got to Stuttgart, Main Street Stuttgart. There's like a parking lot there just south of the main stage on Thanksgiving night, which also happens to be Black Friday. So just for a second, imagine, like, I had all the duck. I literally took 8 duck calls that were tuned to that show, and I took about 30 that were not tuned. And my plan was to tune the 30 while I was selling the 8, right? We had everything in one box, like the whole company in one box. And we had, at the time, we made one duck call. That was it. Just one. No turkey calls, no, nothing else. One duck call, the original BSOD. And we pulled into this parking lot and we couldn't get the heater fired up. So me and our wives were freezing to death, literally. You know, it was cold like this. It was spitting snow and all that. So we had the brilliant idea that we'd run to Walmart and get ourselves a 12-pack of beer and a space heater. And we ended up in the Stuttgart Walmart at like 11:50.
Oh, no. Oh, no way.
There's no such thing as Snapchat, but I'm telling you, the things that we witnessed in that Stuttgart Walmart, it's like right before midnight, were absolutely epic. I mean, oh man, we cut line, and I mean, there were fist fights. It was great, but we got those space eaters and the girls survived.
Well, look, last week when we left the story, you were you're playing a tennis match.
Yep.
And you were losing the ball in your sight.
Yep. So we were playing tennis at Christian Brothers Collegiate High School there on the west side of St. Louis. And their tennis courts are kind of elevated, and so there's like not much horizon behind you. And this boy, you know, he'd served a ball and the first one I just, you know, I missed it, it passed me, and I didn't hardly swing. And I thought, man, that was weird. So he hit another one, and then the second one hit me right center in the chest. And I was terribly embarrassed, you know, and I was like, what the heck is going on? I should be able to hit the tennis ball. And so I said, hey, you know, throw one over here like a baseball. Like, throw it over here about 2 or 3 feet beside me, and I'm going to stand here like I was hitting a baseball, and I'm going to try to hit it. Man, he threw it, and it bounced one time on my side of the net, and I saw the ball with my eyes, but I could not decide how far away from me it was. And I tried to watch it, and I swung, and I missed, and when I swung, the ball was 3 feet past me. It had bounced and come past it. It wasn't like the guy was winding up and throwing a fastball. Like, he just lobbed one in there, you know? I was taking a Babe Ruth cut. I was trying to hit it out to the interstate. And I said, man, what the heck is going on? And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I cannot see the ball. He was like, what do you mean you can't see the ball? And I was like, man, I'm telling you, like, I can see it when it leaves your hand, but I cannot tell when it gets to me. It's like it's coming fast and frozen in time all at the same time. And he was like, man, whatever. He was like, you just suck at tennis and I'm beating your butt. And I was like, all right, whatever. And I mean, so like we hit one or two more back and forth and I never hit one. And it was very, very unnerving to me. And I thought to myself, something is not right. I could not figure it out. Something's not right. So we wrapped it up. I didn't even.
Do you have any clue?
No clue. No. I mean, everything's going through my mind. I mean, here I am. I'm 26 years old. I'm a little bit overweight, but not much. I mean, I was exercising and stuff, and I got two kids, and I'm thinking, is this what it's like to be, you know, middle-aged guy? Like, you just all of a sudden you lose all of your athletic ability? Like, you just, you know, like your dignity, you just dumped it out somewhere and you don't have it anymore? Like, what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not Alex Rodriguez or, you know, Derek Jeter, but dang, I mean, you know, in college, I got all my wisdom teeth pulled out and hit back-to-back grand slams in a slow pitch softball game. Like, I can hit something that's moving, you know? I mean, I had no clue. I just knew that something wasn't right. And it never occurred to me that something, what could be wrong. So fast forward just a couple hours. I come home. I didn't let him beat me anymore. I just quit. And we came on back, and that was a Friday. And the next morning, we were going to take the kids, Lindy and I were going to take the kids to see Toy Story 2 in the movie theater.
Mm.
And it had just come out, and so it was like a Saturday morning in the middle, you know, I don't know, I guess it was early fall, like August, something like that. School had kind of just started, so I didn't have a whole lot of schoolwork to do. It was kind of an easy weekend, and so we went to see Toy Story 2 at the theater, like at the 10 o'clock movie on Saturday. You know, there's nobody in the movie theater.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I will never forget this moment in my life, but I'm sitting there beside the kids. We had two daughters at the time. Tripp had not been born, so Maddie and Katie are sitting in between me and Lindy, and they're eating popcorn. And it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, so it's early, okay? I mean, nobody's really even woke up. We hadn't even eaten breakfast. You know, so we're eating popcorn and Coke for breakfast at the movie theater. So I'm sitting there, and, like, I reach up, and I rub my right eye, just like rubbing the eye boogers out of your eye. You know, just a normal kind of reach up and rub your right eye. all I could see was half of the movie screen. It was as clear as if you put a curtain over the top half of the movie screen.
It was up and down. It wasn't left and right. You could see.
It was 45 degrees from the top right corner of the screen to the bottom left corner of the screen. The top half, if you cut the screen left to right from top corner to bottom corner, I could see everything in the bottom corner of the screen, nothing in the top corner of the screen. And, you know,
when you finally flipped out. I know what you're about to say, because sometimes when you rub your eye, it takes a second for it to just come back together sometimes.
Right. Yep.
And that's what you thought it was.
Right. So I flipped and I opened both eyes like you've seen a ghost, you know. I'm like, what the heck? I opened both eyes, blinked them a couple times, and then I covered my right eye. And I looked again, and I did it again. Opened both eyes, and I covered my right eye and did it. I did it about four times. And I leaned over to Lindy, and I said, honey, something's wrong. I cannot see out of my left eye. And she said, do what? You know, typical, bless her heart, typical wife mode, like, you're crazy. Get over yourself. We're watching a movie with the kids. You're trying to come up with some reason you shouldn't have to sit here and watch a children's movie, you know? And I'm like, no, seriously, something bad is wrong with my eye. She said, what are you talking about? You're interrupting the movie. And I said, honey, if I cover my right eye, I can only see half of that screen up there. And we're talking about one of those giant screens, like a nice theater. We're not talking about, you know, your $2 Tuesday night movie theater special from 1970. I'm talking about state-of-the-art giant screen. Cover my right eye, I can see half the screen. And the half that I can see is in the bottom right-hand corner. So I can see basically what's just right beside my nose. I have no peripheral vision. And all of a sudden it clicks. Like, this is why I couldn't hit a tennis ball yesterday. And then I really freaked out. I thought, something's wrong. Something's bad wrong. And I don't really understand what it is, but I can't see out of that eye. So I grabbed my phone and I send a text message to my buddy, Wayne Connell, who's an optometrist in Knoxville. He grew up in Memphis with us. And I said, hey, man, I hate to bug you on a Saturday morning, but I said, if I cover my right eye, I can only see out of half of my left eye. And he sent me one back and he said, dude, that's not right. And I said, yeah, tell me about it. And he sent me one back that said, you need to stop what you're doing. You need to go see a doctor immediately. And I said, like, how immediately? He said, like, you need to get in your car, you need to drive to Memphis, and you need to see the best ophthalmologist that you can find. And I said, are you serious? Like, can you call me? And he immediately called me, and I stepped out of the movie theater, and I described it to him, and he said, Spence, I don't know, but he said, it sounds to me like your retina is detached. And he said, if your retina is detached, at every moment that your retina is detached, there are little neurons in there that receive light. And he said, the longer that thing is detached, the worse your future prognosis is. He said, you either need to go see somebody in St. Louis right now, or you need to get in the car and you drive to Memphis and you call your dad and you need to see if your dad can get you on the horn with somebody at UT, you know, at Southern College of Optometry or UT Health Sciences or something. And I was like, dang, are you serious? He was like, yeah. He's like, he said, Spence, seriously, I'm not trying to freak you out, but he said, you need to, this is like code red, you know, you need to kick it in gear. I walked back in the movie theater. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I've had a couple of family members and friends that have had detached retinas before. Mm-hmm. It is very, very serious. Most of the time, to have a detached retina, I want to back up just a little bit. To get a detached retina, usually you have to take a jolt.
And that's what I was about to say. Had anything happened, or about to ask, had anything happened?
I've heard people shooting too strong of a shotgun and, you know, 3.5-inch shell in a Benelli and detaching their retina. Can you think of the moment that it may have happened?
So this is going to forever be on this podcast when I tell you this.
Wait a minute.
So there's two things that come to mind. Okay. One is it's August of, this would have been like early August of 2009. And we're real serious, trying to get this injection mold made. So I'm cutting ults for people and I'm blowing cut downs like nonstop in my apartment. And to this day, I have one friend who swears on his life that I detached my retina blowing a cut down. And I don't believe it, but he swears that I did. And he's like, yeah, I mean, you know, like, oh yeah, like an ophthalmologist is going to know whether or not you can detach your retina by blowing a cut down. he's like, name me an ophthalmologist that can blow a duck call. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, but I asked him if I could. And he's like, oh yeah. Oh, you asked an ophthalmologist if you could detach your retina blowing a duck call. And he goes, okay, that's good. Does the ophthalmologist own a duck call? Does he know what it does to your retina when you blow a duck call? And I'm like, okay, you got a good point. I don't know. But the other hilarious part to this, because that's one of the things that was said was, you know, did you, like, are you, and the doctor is like, look, I'm not trying to be silly, but he said, I need to ask you some questions. I'm like, okay. He goes, do you box? Do you kickbox? Do you, you know, do you do martial arts? Do you, any of those kind of things? Like, take any blunt force to the head? And I mean, I'm looking at the guy like, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, my dad would have whooped my butt if I got in a fight. Like, you just walked away from a fight. You know, nobody wins in a fight kind of thing. And I'm like, no, I don't box. Are you kidding? No. You know, I don't kick. Are you kidding? Yoga, kickboxing? Like, no, I don't do that stuff. But then I got thinking about it. And the weekend before this, I was in Monticello, Arkansas. Because a buddy of ours down there who had been a row crop farmer in West Tennessee had leased a farm in Monticello, Arkansas, out of some co-op trade rag, you know, farming newspaper.
Yeah.
And so he moved his family, like in March, in the springtime, he moved his family down to Monticello and he rented this farm. It was about 1,500 acres. It was one continuous block, no trees on it, had a house on the corner. It was almost a perfect square. And he moved down there to farm, and he had been working for somebody else. And he got down there, he planted the whole thing in beans, and it had all kinds of underground irrigation. It was awesome, and it was quite the setup for a farm just to cash rent. And he needed to make a big lick in his first year, and so he sold a bunch of his beans forward. Prices were high in the springtime. He sold a bunch of them forward, and he got to, like, I guess he planted his beans like in May, early June, and he got to, say, 4th of July, and he called me and he said, Spence, I got a problem. I said, all right, what you got? He said, you're not going to believe me when I tell you this, but he said, the deer have literally eaten half of my crop. He said, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to file bankruptcy because I don't think I've got enough beans on the ground or up to make enough crop to cover what I sold forward. And I was like, dang, you're kidding me. And he's right. In my mind, I'm going, no way. Nobody has enough deer that they could, like, damage a 1,500-acre bean field. And I said, I mean, how sure are you right now? And he said, I'm positive. He said, I know for a fact they've completely decimated a third of it. And he said, getting from a third to half, not much. And he said, I'm telling you, they're everywhere. And I said, okay, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, silly as this sounds, he said, I don't even own a rifle. I don't hunt. And I knew this about him. He was not a hunter. And he said, man, would you get some guys together and come down here and shoot these deer? And I was like, I mean, sure. You know, the redneck in me's coming out. I'm sitting in St. Louis, Missouri in an apartment, you know, in seminary in July. And I'm like, so a guy really wants me to come and try to save his bankruptcy with my .270 rifle and my Tasco scope. Okay, challenge accepted. Right,
got it. So, yep.
Yeah. So I get on the telephone and I get two truckloads full of, you know, guys, and we got ARs and bolt actions and every which and rifle you could find and every spotlight everybody could muster. And,
couldn't have been a tough conversation with anybody. I mean, it had to just be, hey, look, this is the problem, and I'm assembling somebody to try to fix it.
It was easy convincing them. Trying to convince Lindy that it was my Christian duty to leave the family for 3 days and go try to save another Christian family's financial situation by, shooting deer in the summertime she was like, look, I know my daddy didn't hunt, and I didn't grow up like that, but she's like, come on, I've heard it all. And I'm like, no, really, like, you can call his wife. I mean, it's... So anyways, we went down there, and in two nights, we recorded a little over 100 and some odd deer that we, and when I say, like, confirmed kills, I'm talking about, like, we got out of the truck, went over there and touched them, and the number that we probably killed that didn't fall right where we shot them, if you're tracking with me, is pushing a scary number. Like, we'd come around a little corner, and there'd be 30 deer in the field, and we would turn all the lights off and spread out 8 wide and flip all the lights on and then just go to – I mean, it sounded like we were rolling thunder out in the soybean field. I mean, it was hellacious deer volleys. And we did that for two nights all night long. The farm was just big enough that you could make a loop around it. By the time you got – you'd shoot about three groups going around it. By the time you got back to his house and kind of regrouped for just a second, you could make another lap and there'd be deer out there. And so for two full nights, like, we got there Friday afternoon, for two full nights we shot deer. I mean, just as fast, as furious as you could shoot them. And so the only possible injury that I can think of is that in two nights, I probably shot five or six boxes of 270 rounds. And I shot them, I mean, from the back of a moving vehicle, I shot them walking around. I shot a 270 every possible way that a human could imagine. Turned it sideways like I was, in North Memphis. I mean, I did it every possible way you could kill a deer. I don't know if that did it or not, but.
All right. I got to say this, and that may not be allowed on a, this is on podcast, not on live air. So you got to look, the audience and Josh, you got to agree with me. When he gave us that laugh, you thought.
Oh, my mind went places that I'm not bringing up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely thought it was some trick stuff.
That's pretty safe compared to where my mind was.
Well,
sorry.
He gave us the laugh.
The truth. Yeah, I mean, but.
You did the laugh going into that.
But, anyway, you, somewhere along the way, you apparently sustained an injury that caused it. I mean, that's what I was going to say. Did they ever say something had to happen, like physically, can it just
the doctors,
happen?
We're talking about ophthalmologists who not only have not blown a cut down, they probably have never shot five boxes of 270 rounds in a two evening period of time. So they really didn't know, but what I don't think it happened the week before. And the reason is because I'll tell you a little more of the medical story here to explain it. But so I go back into the movie theater. I talk to Lindy and we chit chat. We watch the end of the movie. And we go straight back to the apartment. We pack a couple bags. Kids are little. I'm on the phone with my dad. I call home and I'm like, I need you to help me find somebody. I want to do this in Memphis. I don't want to do it in St. Louis. And I'm thinking, we got family in Memphis. At least we can get some help with the kids and whatever and all this. And so we leave St. Louis by noon. We're in Memphis around 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. The director of the UT Health Sciences, his name was Barrett Hike. He happened to be a great client of my dad's, a veterinary client, and he said, I'll meet him up there and look at it on a Saturday afternoon. I said, okay. So he looked at it, and he said, son, we got to do surgery, like, right now. He said, the soonest that we can do surgery is going to be Monday morning at 7 o'clock. Nobody will do surgery tomorrow on the Sunday. And I said, okay. So we, you know, we got the kids settled, whatever. And Monday morning at 7 o'clock, they did surgery. As I understood the surgery, they were going to go in. Your retina is a lot like the liner on a pool. Like if there's a scratch or a cut in the liner, the water in the pool gets under that liner and the negative pressure lifts the liner off the bottom of the pool. And so your retina is similar. If you get a hole or a weak spot in your retina where the fluid in your eye gets behind it, the fluid itself, the negative pressure of the fluid can actually lift the retina off of the eye. And so when they got in there, what they found was a lot of scar tissue. And so after surgery, they said, we think that this either happened a long time ago and you've just been living with partial vision in your left eye and you didn't realize it for, you know, months or years. They didn't know. But they said this didn't happen yesterday. And so what they do in the surgery is your retina is like a flat piece of tissue, okay? And it's supposed to lay flat just like a liner in a pool, and there's fluid that sits on top of it that keeps it in place. Well, if it lifts up, then there's a flap there and there's fluid underneath it and it's just floating detached. And when it's detached, they have to go in there and they have to straighten it out and flatten it back down. And they have to put something, either laser it around the edge, or they have to put a heavier fluid than the fluid the good Lord gave you in your eye in order to push against it to hold it in place.
Bubble.
So when they do what?
The bubble.
That's exactly right.
Have to have that bubble put in.
Correct. Some people have a gas bubble that dissipates on its own. Some people have, if you have a bad situation like mine, you have silicone oil, because the viscosity of the silicone oil is heavier than the fluid in your eye, the natural biological fluid in your eye. And so they put the oil in your eye, and that keeps the retina held in place better. So what they did, so I wake up from surgery, and they're like, we got good news and we got bad news. The good news is, we got your retina reattached. It's lasered around the edges. There's no way it'll ever detach. But the bad news is there is a lot of scar tissue. And they said, we cleaned as much of the scar tissue off as we can, but the scar tissue is kind of like, if you think about the metaphor of the pool liner, if you lifted the liner of the pool off and you put gravel underneath the pool liner and then you put the liner back down, the liner's not laying flat. It's bumpy. And any time you have, you know, bumps or stretches or abnormalities in how flat and smooth that retina lays, it distorts your vision. And so they said, your retina is reattached. That's good. The bad news is you got a lot of scar tissue. And your retina is actually a little muscle. It's a little tissue of like, kind of muscle might not be the right scientific doctor term, but it has some elasticity to it and some stretch. And with the scar tissue, you know, just like your skin, it draws up. And they said, you know, your retina was drawn up and a lot of scar tissue. And so we tried to flatten all that out, but they said it's ugly. And they said, we're afraid that you're going to have some distortion in your vision. I said, okay. And you know, I had no idea what I was. At this point in your life, you're just listening to what they say. And so it never occurs to you that things could get worse. You think, you know, you do a surgery, it gets better. So you just do everything they tell you. And so what they said was, we lasered it, and it won't detach again. No matter what happens, it'll never detach again. And they said, we put oil in there, and we had to put oil in there because there's a lot of scar tissue, and it's going to want to pull up. It's going to want to draw away from where we lasered it because of that scar tissue. And we think we cleaned it good and got it laying flat, and we hope that you're going to have good vision, but you may very well have some distorted vision. I said, okay. So So they put the oil in there. You got a patch on, and basically you keep the patch on for 24 hours, and you have headaches, and it's pretty miserable. You know, your eye hurts, your face hurts, they literally stick needles.
You didn't have to lay down with your head for like two rounds.
No, that's correct. That's the gas bubble, and that does that. And you'll when I tell you this next part, you'll understand why people put up with that 2 weeks of gas. Well, so when you have the oil in there, what they tell you about the oil is that there's just horrible side effects to the oil. And so, you know, you say, well, okay, what are the side effects? Well, they say the oil breaks down, and the little particles in the oil do a lot of things to your eye. One, they cause glaucoma. Glaucoma is when the pressure in your eye gets too high. And so your eye's like a bubble, you know, or like a balloon. And, you know, the tighter the balloon gets, the closer it is to kind of popping. And if you can imagine all the nerves in your eye, God gave your eye a certain amount of pressure that it's supposed to be at, and your nerves don't hurt there. But if your eye gets more pressure, God made your body so that your eye hurts. And so glaucoma is when the pressure in your eye is too high. Well, the oil causes glaucoma. It also causes cataracts, which a cataract is like a giant smudge on your lens. It's a frosted, it's kind of like the difference between looking through clear glass and looking through the frosted glass on the shower door. And so they say these are long-term side effects, so we need to make sure to remove the oil from your eye. Okay, no problem. So you come home and you lay in the bed and you sit there and think about your eye for 24 hours. And the next morning you get up and you go back to the doctor's office, same person that does your surgery, and they remove your patch, and now all of a sudden you can see light through that eye, and there's blood all in your vision, which is horrible and freaky. It's like just messes with your brain. You know, you're seeing spots of blood in your eye and whatever. And so they look at it, and then they shine bright lights in it, and they check your retina, and if everything's good, they say, okay, in 30 days, we want to see you back here, and we're going to do the same procedure, except we're going to extract the oil, and we're going to let your eye go back to, you know, filling itself up with the normal fluid. Say, okay. So for 30 days, you have this oil in there. Well, when you have oil in there, oil refracts light different than water. So as soon as you wake up and you have, you know, as soon as they take your bandage off and you're seeing again, now, before in my left eye, I was nearsighted. Well, now because of the oil, I'm farsighted. So I get this surgery done and I go back to school and I'm in Hebrew class trying to translate right to left and for right to left, you know, top to bottom, like back, everything's backwards. And in my left eye, I can see clear as a bell at 50 yards. And in my right eye, I can't see anything, you know, out past 2 inches. Like, I got to have it right up here next to my eye. So now my glasses don't work anymore. My contacts don't work anymore. And even if I put a contact in my right eye, I'm farsighted in my left eye all of a sudden. And so I, for a little while, I wore a patch on my left eye to just try to get it, you know, get it where they could get the oil out. And it was a nightmare. Then I gave up on the patch because it's uncomfortable to wear.
But I think it would be so cool to wear a patch.
That's what everybody that doesn't wear a patch says.
You're gonna say that.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool for a minute and then it's not
the Memphis Backstreets minute you're talking about. You're talking about truly a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, you don't think about it, but like, you don't want a piece of elastic run through your hair all the time. Like, it just, it snags on.
It bugs
and
you.
It bugs you. You know, yeah, it bugs you. And then you bump into something, it pops off, and then you're a freak show, you know, and everybody's like, "Yeah, oh, look at that. Whoa, dang, put that patch back on, dog." You know, I mean, just, not to mention, it just rubs on your eye. And so when you, you know, when you put pressure on your, you hold your hand over your left eye or one eye, it bugs your other eye. Like, you're not supposed to have stuff over your face. You know, that's just not the way God made your head. And so I couldn't do the patch. So then I went to the doctor, to an eye doctor, and I got a set of glasses that the left lens made the far-sighted vision near. Like, it corrected it to where I could see stuff up close.
Did that not make
right
you have headaches?
Was the same. It was awful. I mean, it was horrible. Yeah. Headaches every day. So I'd try to just limp through class, and then I'd go lay down and close my eyes because it was the only way I could function. So 30 days in, you know, it's a mess. And I go back to Memphis, and they're going to remove the oil. And in my mind, they're going to remove the oil. I'm going to have some vision again, and I'll have to get new contacts and new glasses again and whatever, but at least it's not going to be farsighted anymore. They get the oil out of there. So I show up, and I get the oil removed, and they say, all right, you know, same drill, do the surgery. You wake up, they tell you how the surgery went. It went great. We lasered everything again. Now they've lasered my retina twice, okay? And they said, we removed the oil. We re-lasered everything. It's awesome. It's great. It's not going to detach. Your eye will fill itself up with fluid, you know, on its own. And we want to see you back here in the morning. They got a big patch, you know, taped up on you. And okay, so show back up the next morning. And by the next morning, you know, you've taken a shower. So the patch is kind of starting to fall off. Well, I can kind of see through the patch. And the next morning, I knew something was not right. It felt weird. It hurt more than normal. And so they pulled the patch off in the doctor's office, and they flipped out. And they said, your retina's detached again.
Oh,
and I'm like, you're kidding me. I said, yesterday y'all said there was no chance that would ever happen. You've lasered it twice. And they were like, I know, I'm sorry. What, you know, that. And so I'm like, all right, so what are we going to do? And they're like, well, you need to head downtown, and we're going to have to reattach it, put the oil back in right now.
Oh.
I'm like, you're kidding me. So we go downtown, we go through the whole drill again, and they put the oil in there. All right. So I'm going to fast forward now, about 2 months out from now. They do this same sequence three more times.
They
do the retina surgery. They flatten the retina out. They put the oil in. They wait 30 days. They take the oil out, relaser everything. It's never going to detach. It detaches. The next morning at the post-op, they go back in. And so
this whole time? And
I was trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. This started in August, and I was finishing up summer Hebrew. And I was so the full semester was supposed to start there in September. Well,
okay, yeah.
So I limped through Hebrew, literally limped through Hebrew, and I made it, but it was the only class I was taking. It was like a 3-hour class in the morning every day of the week, and then I would just lay in bed. I would just lay flat on my back and close my eyes the rest of the day. Hardest thing I've literally ever done. And I'd have to do something with either my left eye or my right eye. I couldn't use both of them at the same time at all in that class. So we do this surgery three more times, okay? Now, one other detail that matters here in my life is that I got a wife and two kids.
That's what I was about to say.
And I'm paying my bills by selling beer at Cardinal Stadium, mind you, in a big plastic tub that I put 48 16-ounce beers in. Okay? It's a lot of weight. And after the first surgery, they say you can't lift anything more than 20 pounds.
Ugh.
So now I don't have a job. I'm trying to translate Hebrew from right to left. I'm farsighted in my left eye. I'm nearsighted in my right eye. I'm a train wreck. I mean, and I'm miserable. I'm frustrated. I'm broke. And on top of all that, the only health insurance policy that I could afford at the time. And I'm glad, I'm very thankful for my health insurance. Okay. But I couldn't afford a rich health insurance policy. So I had a high deductible health insurance policy, and my deductible was $10,000. So in two months, I was unemployed. I had 18 hours of seminary that I had already paid for that fall semester that I had to take. School told me that I couldn't withdraw and get my money back, and I owed $10,000 to United Healthcare for eye surgeries that had been unsuccessful. And on top of that, in about a 3 month period of time, 2 or 3 month period of time, I'd had 7 or 8 procedures, major, like full sedation, you know, knocked you out, wake up from it, go back the next day. And we did all this from St. Louis. So we would pack everybody up, come
go back,
do a couple of days, and then we would rush back. Like, we would do this on a Thursday because I didn't have class on Fridays, and then rush back, and then back and forth. And
that's so miserable that it almost became like a routine.
So,
like, that's miserable.
It was awful. I don't even know how to explain what a horrific cycle it was for our family.
I mean, there had to be points in there. You were just like, I mean, you had to be doubting everything, especially after
absolutely.
2 or 3 of this.
And so, so what happened in that process was my poor wife, I mean, she had a meltdown. She couldn't take it. I was trying to, you know, I was in class, couldn't see. When I came home, I was laying on my back, you know, closing my eyes, and she stressed out to the point of just, it literally just rocked her body. And she started having, like these horrible symptoms that the doctors thought was Crohn's disease. And so she went to the doctor in St. Louis, a doctor that we didn't know, we didn't trust, and we had no relationship with. And he put her on 2 steroids and like 4 antibiotics. And the steroids and the antibiotics made her nauseous every hour on the hour. Like, she couldn't function. And so we went in a 3 month period of time, we went from happy, you know, ice cold, you know, too cold to hold, living the dream in seminary, to I had no vision in my left eye. I owed United Healthcare $10,000. And
no job.
And my wife could not function for more than an hour at a time. And so I had no idea what I was going to do. And so on the one hand, I'm like, okay, is this just Satan's way of just attacking me? And I need to just like, you know, grab my bootstraps and tough it out, you know, and this is part of my story, and I just need to, you know, we got to get through this. But then on the other hand, I'm going, this is literally killing my wife. She's stressed to the max. We have 2 little children. She can't take care of them because she's on all these medicines, and they're the side effects of the medicines are just rocking her body. And you know, it. So it's this cluster of things happen all at the same time. So I had a decision to make. Like, what am I going to do? Exactly what am I going to do? Do you get up and go to class every day? Do you just try to make the best of it, keep on going? But I had no income now. I had no plan. No. So,
well, that is a great stopping point leading into next week. Okay, I was about to do it. I was saying a silent apology before I said it. But,
the silent apology.
Yeah.
You know, Spitt, most of the listeners that listen to this podcast are duck hunters, of course. I don't think that people that are listening to this understand how many duck hunters or goose hunters have detached retinas from shooting shotguns. It's a lot.
Really? Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, in the 20 years that I got it, I can think of 4 right now that hunted with me that had detached retinas after they left from hunting.
Yeah, that's what
the doctors said to me was that people that are severely nearsighted, nearsighted vision is a reflection of your and especially astigmatism and nearsighted vision.
Mm.
Those two things are are the result of your eye being elongated and stretched in a direction. And when that happens, if there's any weak strands of pigment in the back of your eye or in your retina, there's that's places that over time fluid can
it wears it out.
So they,
I see.
Right, it wears it out. And so they say that shooting a shotgun or jolts like that can jar that enough to where you get some fluid behind there. And so it's like which comes first, the chicken or the egg, you know. But clearly people that are very severely nearsighted and with astigmatism are at a much higher risk for detached retinas than anybody else. And I had just significant astigmatism and, you know, nearsighted in my left eye, so in both eyes. But
so it's a great point to start from next week. Spence, thank you again for sharing the story. it's being followed a lot. Listen, I know you got a big weekend planned with opening of duck season coming up. Be careful out there. Josh, thank you for being here. Spence, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.